All right, well, we're going to Mark chapter 10. We're going to finish up our discipleship series, Following Jesus on the Way. And we have this last episode in Mark chapter 10, which ends this section to look at. So we'll be reading verses 46 to 52. And they came to Jericho, and as he went out of Jericho with his disciples and a great number of people, blind Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, sat by the highway side, begging. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, Jesus, thou son of David, have mercy on me. And many charged him that he should hold his peace. But he cried the more a great deal, thou son of David, have mercy on me. And Jesus stood still and commanded him to be called. And they called the blind man, saying unto him, be of good comfort, rise, he calleth thee. And he, casting away his garment, rose and came to Jesus. And Jesus answered and said unto him, what wilt thou that I should do unto thee? The blind man said unto him, Lord, that I might receive my sight. And Jesus said unto him, go thy way, thy faith hath made thee whole. And immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus in the way. So James and John went to Jesus and asked him to be given seats on the right hand and left hand of his throne and his kingdom. This is in the previous episode to this, verses 35 to 45. Now, Jesus had promised the apostles thrones in his kingdom prior to this. And James and John came to him with this request because they wanted to be above the other disciples, the other apostles. And, of course, this angered the other disciples when they found out about it. They all had their bid in on being the greatest among them. Well, Jesus responds to their request by pointing them to his coming sufferings, described as a cup and a baptism in divine wrath. And Jesus here ends this section before he enters into Jerusalem by really filling out the picture of his coming suffering and death, because not only are we told how or what about his death, but we're actually here told why, the purpose of it. Well, James and John and the conception that they had of greatness and how to get to greatness was more in line with the world than it was Christ's kingdom. The highest place is for the lowest servant of all. And Jesus, of course, gives himself as the example. As the Son of Man, one destined for the highest exaltation, he came to the earth to humble himself. Paul adds in Philippians chapter 2 that he took on himself the form of a man, that he stooped. This is God in human flesh. And he humbled himself, and he came to the earth and served. He didn't come to be served. He didn't come to be thought great. He didn't come to be made great in worldly terms. And his service included particularly the giving of his own life as a ransom price paid to free lowly slaves. So the message for the disciples is clear. Don't strive for position and authority over others. Don't strive for honor among men, but be content to be a low slave. And furthermore, be glad because Jesus came to die to pay the ransom price for your release. So as we come to verses 46 to 52, this is the conclusion for this section in Mark's gospel with its focus on discipleship. This section began with the healing of the blind man from Bethsaida in chapter 8, verses 22 to 26. And it ends with the healing of blind Bartimaeus here at the end of chapter 10. And these are the only two specific healings of blindness in this section of Mark's gospel. Now, throughout this section, the disciples blindness has been highlighted. And their blindness is a lack of understanding. So on the one hand, their blindness is highlighted through a lack of understanding and comprehension, and even sometimes a resistance to what Jesus is telling them. But their blindness is also highlighted in this section in the distraction, the state of distraction that they were in because they were preoccupied with position and rewards, wanting, striving to be greatest, which was obviously culminated in James and John actually making the request of Jesus to be put in those two highest position among the apostles. Well, Bartimaeus provides some key contrasts here in Mark's gospel. The disciples, of course, are still manifesting the blurred vision like the man from Bethsaida had after the first step in his healing, while Bartimaeus will be instantly healed. The rich young man could not leave all and follow Jesus Christ, and Bartimaeus casts aside his cloak and follows after Jesus. Well, the lesson on discipleship ends here also with some good news. So we want to look at this episode in two parts, verses 46 to 48, where we see the blind beggar on the side, and in verses 49 to 52, we see the blind man healed and following Jesus. So beginning with verse 46, where we meet the blind beggar on the side. And they came to Jericho, and as he went out of Jericho with his disciples, a great number of people, blind Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, sat by the highway side begging. So as Jesus continues on his journey toward Jerusalem, he and his disciples come to Jericho. Jericho was about 18 miles northeast of Jerusalem. And Jericho to Jerusalem, though a very common route that was traveled by the Jews in that day, was also an all-uphill road with around 3,500 feet in elevation change between the low-lying Jericho, which actually lies below sea level, and Jerusalem on the top of the mountains. Now this, again, was a common route to Jerusalem, and Mark notes that the disciples were with Jesus, they were following him, but there was also a large crowd, a great number of people. Now he doesn't say that this crowd was following Jesus specifically. They were likely pilgrims on the way to Jerusalem for the Feast of the Passover. That was very near at this time. The situation, of course, with this large number of people, whether they were specifically following Jesus or not, the large number of people that were moving along this route, a very common route of travel, of course, set up the perfect situation for beggars such as this Bartimaeus that we meet here. Mark also notes that he was blind and that he was begging. Now, he was obviously destitute. He was obviously a poor, handicapped man of no social standing and of no real possessions or property. And he's also literally on the sideline while Jesus and the disciples are on the road. Verse 47. And when he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out and say, "Jesus, thou son of David, have mercy on me." Now Mark doesn't say how that Bartimaeus heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth there. He could have been told specifically. He could have maybe asked, you know, he could tell that there was a stir. He could have asked about it. Or he could have simply overheard others talking about it as they're on the way. And, of course, Jesus' presence anywhere created quite a stir in Israel. But Mark indicates here that he was calling out to Jesus, that he cries out loudly to Jesus. And with a large company of people, there had to be a lot of noise and a lot of confusion, and he's seeking to call out to Jesus. Now, this is the first appearance of the title Son of David in Mark's Gospel, and it's pretty rare in Mark's Gospel for that amount. But this title, Son of David, being addressed to Jesus by Bartimaeus, amounts to a confession of Jesus of Nazareth as the Messiah of Old Testament promise. The Old Testament promised a Messiah who was to be the Son of David, to bring in the kingdom to Israel, like prophesied in places like Isaiah chapter number 11, in anticipation of the fulfillment of God's covenant with David, which also included the opening of the eyes of the blind and the ears of the deaf in prophecies like Isaiah chapter 35 that looks forward to that time as well. Isaiah 35:10 also says this, this last verse of that chapter, "And the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with songs and everlasting joy upon their heads. They shall obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away." And this is the Davidic Messiah, the Son of David, who returns to Zion and brings in the kingdom. And as you go back earlier in Isaiah 35, he mentions all of these various healings, the blind and the deaf and the lame and so on. So after all of that, that's the picture in Zion with the Messiah there. Now Bartimaeus refers to him as the Son of David, referring to this expectation that Jesus of Nazareth is the Messiah, the one who's going to bring healing and peace and restoration to Israel and in fact to the world. Now, Bartimaeus further demonstrates faith by calling out to Jesus as the Son of David to have mercy on him or to show grace to him. And we know that it is faith because that is specifically stated in verse number 52 when Jesus tells him at the end that thy faith hath made thee whole. In verse 48, "And many charged him that he should hold his peace. But he cried the more a great deal, Thou Son of David, have mercy on me." Now Mark notes that there were many of the crowd that told him to be quiet. They tried to silence him, which of course echoes the disciples previously when they were forbidding a man who was casting out devils in Jesus' name but was not operating under their control or authority. Well, we don't know if the disciples were part of this rebuke to Bartimaeus or not. Mark doesn't specify. It was most likely just the crowd that was close to Bartimaeus. Now, the disciples had previously rebuked those who were bringing little children to Jesus back in chapter 10, verses 13 to 16. And as you recall, they were rebuked for doing so. And we would like to think that they did not repeat that here, though that certainly is possible. But as we read this account, the disciples really are in the background. They're mentioned at the beginning and not through the rest of this account. So most likely it wasn't coming from them. Mark frequently notes persistence on the part of those coming to Jesus. It's something that he highlights often in the account of Jesus that he has given. And when he does so, it is a way that faith is manifested. So in those who come to Jesus, and you have instances in chapter 2 and verse 5, and chapter 5 and verse 23, and again in verse 34, chapter 7 verses 27 to 29, and verse number 32, and we have also seen this persistence in this section of Mark's Gospel in the case of the blind man from Bethsaida in chapter 8, verse 22, and in the case of the father of the boy who was possessed by a devil in chapter 9 and verse number 24. So again, Mark often notes this persistence, and it is a way of depicting or evidencing faith. Now you notice that Bartimaeus repeats his previous appeal, using the Son of David title again, and asking for mercy or asking for grace from him. Well, then we get to the second part, verses 49 to 52, where we see Bartimaeus healed and following Jesus. In verse 49, "And Jesus stood still and commanded him to be called, and they called the blind man, saying unto him, Be of good comfort, rise, he calleth thee." So Jesus stopped his walk. That's what Mark is making note of. He stops his walk. He's at a standstill here in response to the calling out of Bartimaeus. And Jesus told some of those, presumably this would be some in the crowd, to call Bartimaeus to him. Now, Mark isn't specific again. He doesn't mention the disciples or that it was the disciples Jesus told to call Bartimaeus to him. But whereas Bartimaeus had previously been rebuked by the crowd, he is now told that it is okay. And as I understand it, this expression, this "be of good comfort" or "be of good cheer," as it appears a number of times in the gospel accounts, is would be an idiomatic expression that would be similar to us telling someone today, "It's okay, it's all right, it's all right. He's calling for you. Come on, it's okay." And that's essentially what they were saying to him. So this man who had been rebuked by the crowd, they tried to silence him, but he would not be silenced. He's told that it's okay, and that Jesus is calling for him. Now, the word "calling" is actually emphasized in this verse. It's repeated three times in this one verse. And calling is one of those terms, much like "on the way," or "in the way," that is a term associated with discipleship, associated with following Jesus, particularly in the Gospels and in Mark's Gospel. So in other words, Mark is preparing us for this conclusion. Jesus is calling you. It's okay. He's calling you. Verse number 50. "And he, casting away his garment, rose and came to Jesus." So Mark makes note that when Bartimaeus rose up from where he was sitting on the side, he cast away aside his garment. Now this refers to his outer cloak. His outer cloak that most likely would have been tattered. It would have been worn. It was the possession of a blind beggar. So I'm sure that it was not in top repair, nor was it of the latest fashion in Jerusalem. But here he also contrasts with this rich young man that had come to Jesus. He was so grieved because he had so many possessions. And the thought that he would have to part with them was so much that he just could not do it. And he went away from Jesus rather than following after him. Back up in verse 22 of this chapter. Now it's easy for us to think about this incident and Mark making note of this, how he casts aside his cloak, and to think, you know, that's really nothing. There's a few of us that probably have some old clothes that need to be thrown away, but we just can't quite bear to part with them. But for many of us, it's nothing to cast away something that's old, it's out of date, it's out of style, it's out of use, it's in bad repair, whatever the case may be. It's really nothing for us to think about throwing something like that away. But this was most of what this man had. And he casts it aside to go to Jesus. Now this also might demonstrate to us, at least in part, why Jesus said it was so hard for the rich to enter into the kingdom. They can't bear to part with what they have in the world. Be that an abundance of possessions, be that position or honor or fame or whatever that it might be. So last of all, we're told that he came to Jesus. Now, Mark doesn't tell us how he got there. We may have had some help of some sort to get there. But Mark is emphasizing his willingness to go. He came to Jesus. In other words, this is reflecting that this was his desire. He called out to Jesus. Jesus called him and he came to him. Verse 51. And Jesus answered and said unto him, What wilt thou that I should do unto thee? The blind man said unto him, Lord, that I might receive my sight. So Jesus responds to the man coming to him by asking him a question. And it is common in Mark for Jesus to ask questions of those who came to him. What is not common, though, is that Jesus asked Bartimaeus the same question he had just asked James and John in the previous episode. So in verse 36, when they came to him and asked him, wanted to make a request, Jesus said, What would ye that I should do for you? Asking the same question of James and John that is asked of Bartimaeus. If we think about it, that question sets up quite an opportunity, doesn't it? I mean, here is God in the flesh, the Lord of all the universe, the owner, as we are told in the Bible, of the cattle on a thousand hills. So what will you ask of him? It's almost like an open invitation. What will you that I should do for you? Well, James and John, of course, they at such an opportunity asked for a higher place than all the other disciples. We wish to be exalted. Not above you, Lord, of course, but above all of these other disciples. We want to be distinguished from them. In fact, we want to be over them. Bartimaeus, though, doesn't ask for any such exaltation. He asks for his sight, that I might see. I believe this is suggestive that James and John should have asked for the same thing, along with the other disciples. Again, Mark has highlighted, in fact, prior to this, after the feeding of the 4,000, they are specifically charged with blindness by Jesus. As we get into this section, their blindness is demonstrated over and over and over again. And if Jesus' question to them is reflective of what it is that they need most, then their request entirely missed it. We don't need exaltation. We do need to see. We need to see clearly who Jesus is. So Bartimaeus then addressed Jesus, asking for his sight. And he uses a form of rabbi here that's been translated as Lord. He's expressing respect to Jesus, and we can even say faith, given the next verse. We have a number of ways that faith is demonstrated by Bartimaeus here. Verse number 52. And Jesus said unto him, Go thy way. Thy faith hath made thee whole. And immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus in the way. Well, after his request, Jesus responds with an announcement that he has been healed. Notice that Jesus, he didn't touch him. He didn't go through any sort of physical motions or gestures like he did with the blind man from Bethsaida, for instance, in chapter 8, verses 22 to 26. He also went through gestures in the healing of the deaf man by the Sea of Galilee back in chapter 7, verses 31 to 37. But there are no grand gestures here. Rather, just a simple statement that healing has taken place by faith. And Mark notes, as he does frequently, that the healing was immediate and complete. His sight was restored, not in stages like the man from Bethsaida, but he was restored whole immediately. But Mark also notes that immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus in the way. Bartimaeus followed Jesus. In other words, he was healed by faith, and he left all and followed Jesus. Exactly what Jesus has called all to do. He said, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. So as we think about this final episode, the conclusion of this section, this emphasis on discipleship that Mark has given us, the following of Jesus, we see Bartimaeus here, one of the lowest of society. He was a man that had no standing. He was a man that was completely dependent on others. Times like the pilgrim feasts provided a special opportunity. People on their way to Jerusalem, people looking to and willing to give alms. No doubt it was a good time for him to receive such alms. Yet, he believed. He had faith, and he could see more clearly than many of those in the crowd. And that's even before his blindness was healed. So this section of Mark's gospel highlights again the blindness of the disciples. They were unable to see clearly what Jesus was showing them. Part of the time because they were slow of understanding or comprehension. Part of the time because they were resistant, like when Peter rebuked Jesus. And partly because at times they were more preoccupied of who was the greatest among them than they were of the things that Jesus was teaching them. Well, the point once again, and we said this at the very beginning of this series, it's very easy to read through Mark's gospel, and here we sort of have a collection of the follies of the disciples here in just a few chapters. And in such a focused, concentrated dose, it can seem to be quite remarkable. And we could look at it. It's easy to read it and to think, you know, how could they not see this? Why did they stumble this way? Why are they having such problems? Why in the world would James and John go and ask such a question? That's ridiculous. Well, it's easy for us to read that and to see that. But again, the point is not to set them up for us all to point at them and laugh at them and point out what they should have done. In other words, Mark doesn't tell us this for us to feel superior to the disciples as if any one of us would have done better in their place. No, he's giving us this word to identify with them and, in fact, to rejoice. And this, of course, is the good news that comes in this section. You can rejoice in the fact that while the disciples were suffering from blindness and blurred vision, which we also suffer from in so many ways, Jesus is the one who gives sight to the blind. He is the one that receives the least of society who believe in Him and follow Him. And that's what He exhorts us to embrace. That's what He exhorts us to come after Him and to follow Him. And even though we are slow to understand, we don't seem to grasp the things as we ought, but nevertheless, Jesus is the one who gives sight to the blind. And in eternal life, there will be no blindness. There will be no deafness, no sickness, no sorrow, all of those things done away.